How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is October 28, 2014. Figure4Online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. We got the Raw report to talk about tonight and a lot of other news as well. And Dave, what's going on?
That's a good question. It looks like they have no ideas for the pay-per-view.
Well, we've got a Survivor Series. Well, we'll get into it. They're doing a multi-person elimination match, Team Cena versus Team Authority. And
so, in other words, they have no main event.
They got no main event.
They got no main event. We spent all this time thinking, like, what are they going to do? And we had, without even knowing what they're doing, we had better matches than they have. They're just throwing everybody together because they got no ideas.
Yeah,
they're just trying to stall until January.
Well, let's get into the show here because it'll all explain itself as we get going. It started with Hunter, Stephanie, and Kane out in the ring, and Stephanie was all excited, and she said, "If we missed the pay-per-view last night, we missed a hell of a show." And she said, "If you watched on the network, you got more than your money's worth for only $9.99. Hunter put over Seth, said he was the future of the company.
Isn't the monthly price $12.99?
I think they're presuming that most everybody is paying $9.99 a month.
Okay.
Which is probably correct,
I guess.
I mean, maybe there's information I don't know that we'll find out on Thursday, but
they're not paying that in Canada.
No, they're not. No, they're not. This is an American-centric network right now.
I mean, if you think about it, it's like you're already insulting the people who buy your pay-per-views, and also you're insulting everyone with Rogers Cable.
That's right. They did another one of those deals on the pay-per-view last night where they said if you were paying full price for this pay-per-view, you were an idiot. They're the most loyal buyers they've got, paying $12.99 for these shows.
But what about, like, people, let's say, like, you're in the UK, just an example.
Okay, what about them?
You're not paying $9.99 in the UK. Well, I mean, you could if you were, you know, using a fake address. But, I mean, if you're buying it on pay-per-view in the UK, you're paying, I don't know what it is, $17 or something like that?
Well, I think they're trying to avoid the issue of having to do every single promo and mention 8 price points.
Yeah, but by doing that, they're doing the very American-centric stuff for a worldwide company.
Well, I think their bigger concern is trying to get people in America to buy the network as opposed to coming across as an American-centric company across the world.
Yeah. The only thing is that, I don't know, what about people who can't? What about people who don't want to? And what about people who just likes overspending for their product? If somebody wants to overspend for the product, I wouldn't insult them.
No, I would thank them.
And I wouldn't tell you that I wouldn't go out there and make a point of saying how it's not worth it.
No, I would not do any of these things, but that's their strategy right now, and we'll probably find out why on Thursday, I would guess. Because the feeling is this number is not going to be very good.
Well, we'll find out on Thursday. It's hard for me to believe the number wouldn't be up, because how do you roll it out in 170 countries and not get, you know what I mean?
Well, I think the concern is that the number here in America has dropped quite a bit. So even
I'm sure the number in America has dropped. I don't think there's any question that probably has happened. But I mean, you're augmenting it with 170 new countries.
Yes. Well, we'll know more on Thursday. So Seth came out with Mercury and Noble. And he said that finally Dean was out of his hair once and for all. He said he proved last night that intellect conquered mayhem. What a line. Said the next man on the horizon was John Cena. Crowd did the dueling chants for Cena.
Intellect conquers unbridled mayhem perpetuated by a madman who should be institutionalized.
Oh, that
was the line. That was the line.
A line that a man like Seth Rollins would come up with off the top of his head on any given day. So,
and then they wonder why the promos don't work.
Yes. So Seth said he was going to see Cena later on tonight and leave him in a puddle of his own failure, like he had done to Dean Ambrose.
Because you can't say a puddle of your own blood.
No, or urine, unless you're Brock Lesnar. So
I think you can say urine, not just not blood.
Sure. So Orton came out and he was all upset and he said,
"Which do you think sponsors would be madder at?
What are my options? Urine or blood?
Yeah, a puddle of your own urine or a puddle of your own blood?
I would guess probably blood.
Okay.
I could be wrong. I don't know. So Orton came out and he said that maybe the reason he lost last night was because Seth had curb stomped him last week. And he's going crazy. And he had some line about
he was still feeling the effects of the curb stomp. So in other words, he didn't in storyline he got knocked out and he didn't take time off.
That's true. He had his line about how his head still hurt and it hurt so bad that he was ready to book himself back into anger management classes like he had done back in 2006. For real, he added.
Yeah.
So he's on fire, and then he goes after Seth. The Authority has to break it up. Hunter's yelling at him to knock it off. It was actually a pretty great brawl. And Hunter's telling Orton to calm down, and Orton says he'll calm down when Seth is dead. And Hunter told him to take the night off and relax, go back to your bus, have a drink. When the time is right, they would deal with this. And Hunter ended up breaking past Hunter. Orton broke past Hunter. Hit Seth with an RKO. Just laid him out. Seth took the greatest bump ever for this. Place goes absolutely crazy. And then Randy tore off his shirt and stormed to the back. And there have been many people that have called Randy Orton boring. But he single-handedly turned this into a pretty great segment. And it was sucking until he came out.
Yeah, this segment was very good. And then he never came back.
Well, he did do one backstage segment, but yeah,
I was sure he was coming back in the finish of that match. I mean, I was sure of it. And then instead, they had 40 guys who nobody cared about came out, and the one guy they cared about didn't. But they may have a reason for that next week or the week after.
I wouldn't hold my breath.
Actually, on this one, I would. I mean, in the sense of, I think they'll probably do something. Because I figure that the big payoff on this thing is either Randy Orton turns on the Authority at the Survivor Series, or more likely, Randy Orton ends up joining the Cena team against the Authority for the Survivor Series, which is the only one that can make this match mean anything at all. Because if it's just Cena and Dolph Ziggler and God knows who else against
Torino, he was out there in the post-show Battle Royal.
It won't be him. Do they have four baby faces that are over? I mean, they got Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan, but they're not going to be in it. So I think, I guess, what? Maybe Dean Ambrose? Maybe? Unless Dean Ambrose is with Bray Wyatt. But Bray Wyatt could be in this match, so they could do that. Then they would have nothing on the card except for the main event. They'd have no matches of any value. Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Hey, they're going to have Big Show and Mark Henry.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool on paper, but, I mean, I've seen Big Show Mark Henry matches many times, and they're really not very good at all.
So let's get to that, actually. Big Show and Mark Henry face Gold and Stardust for the tag team titles. So I was trying to figure out how they got a tag team title shot, and it was explained. Here's how. They had clips from backstage earlier in the day of a very upset Big Show ranting at Mark Henry about what happened last night. And Mark Henry goes, "I came out to help, not hinder you." And Big Show was still upset, and so Mark said, "I've got a great idea to make you feel better. Let's go win the tag titles." And that's how they got a tag team title shot. So they come out here for the match, and the babyfaces are destroying they're destroying Stardust when Mark Henry gets upset because Big Show does a blind tag, and in doing so, he slaps him really hard on the back, and Mark Henry is complaining to him because it hurt. And so Henry gets on the apron and starts pouting, and he gets in for a hot tag later. The heels clip his leg, go to work. And so Cody drop kicks him off the top, and Henry stumbles into his own corner. Show gets a blind tag again. Henry's even more upset now. Show makes a big comeback, hits a knockout punch on Cody. Mark then gets in the ring, has a word or two with Big Show, and then grabs him, hoists him up, and hits the world's strongest slam, allowing Cody to get the pin on the Big Show. So after the match, Henry gives him a second world's strongest slam.
And a third.
And a third. He's screaming at him, "Nobody hits me!" And the fans are so sympathetic that, in fact, they do chant one more time. And so he hits him with it one more time. And amazingly, after doing what they asked him to do, they still booed Mark Henry. So that was at least good. And then Henry followed it up with a big splash, and that was his big turn. And yeah. JBL suggested there might be more to this than just him getting slapped really hard on a tag.
Well, that's what the promo that came next was, explain that. And they gave him all of 10 seconds, and he just said he did it before he did it to me because he always wanted to be me and he was jealous of me. I thought that they could have come up with more of an explanation than that. But
you know what? In modern-day WWE, half the time I don't even get an explanation, so this was fine.
Yeah. I thought that was really funny when the crowd was chanting USA during this match. I just thought that was pretty good. And then Big Show at one point tried to get the crowd. There was a very light chant of sexual chocolate at one point in the match. So Big Show at one point is trying to get the crowd to cheer sexual chocolate. And it was it was even worse than the usual embarrassing thing where, you know, you can tell like very few people are doing it. This was like so few people are doing it that it's just like, God, it was brutal. I think that like if fans like come up with it on their own, it's one thing, but I think that if it's like a proven chant that works and you lead it, that's cool. You know, like the yes thing, which is always going to work. But when you do something that's confusing or that doesn't appeal to most people to chant, you know, kind of like that Lucha thing on NXT, it's pretty embarrassing.
So then we got another Roman Reigns interview. Cole introduced it by saying, "Here is the man known as the Juggernaut." Has he ever been known as a Juggernaut before? Is this new, or have I been not paying attention?
No, he's the Juggernaut, and he's also the Big Dog. That's his new names.
Wow.
He'll probably get a couple more.
Sure.
The video package was good.
Yeah. He had a better promo than last time. I'll give him that.
Yeah. It's very clear that they have not wavered at all. And that he's the guy,
you
know, and that Dean Ambrose was the setup guy to set up Roman Reigns going after Seth Rollins. So now today, as far as Dean Ambrose losing, it does make sense. I mean, I do get that. But whether that's the right thing to do, I would argue, because they need to make new baby faces. But I think in their mind, it's like Dean Ambrose is number four. So you don't put number one heel under number four baby face. And I get that.
So he basically threatened to whip Seth's ass, as you noted, and people cheered everything. It wasn't horrible. He was a badass this time as opposed to this smiling, happy baby face. So it was big improvement over last time.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, it was fine. They cheered a lot when it was over, too.
Yeah. We had AJ versus Alicia Fox, as I had predicted last night. Paige is out there again doing commentary for the feud that will never end. So AJ made a big comeback, Alicia cut her off, Paige ended up jumping out of the commentary booth, ran over, started shrieking at Alicia to win, at which point AJ immediately rolled her up and pinned her. And so Paige apologized.
Well, Paige shoved her. Paige shoved Alicia Fox first.
Yeah, screaming at her and everything.
Just to set up, I mean, you know, to set it up, yeah.
So Paige apologized afterwards, offered her a bracelet as a peace offering. And then she super kicked her, tossed her outside, and beat her ass. And it was funny because for the first half of this beating, Alicia Fox was trying so hard not to drop this bracelet. She's being thrown into the barricade. She's being tossed and everything. She will not drop this bracelet. And finally, Lawler ends up getting out of the booth, and he goes over and stands over her to protect her, and Paige leaves. And, you know, maybe 15 years ago, one would presume this would lead to something, but it won't.
It's just what it is. Yeah. I mean, the thing is that they, you know, Paige and Alicia Fox split up last night. So it's kind of like, I don't know, maybe they're doing it the Mexican way.
They're frenemies. Remember? They're frenemies.
That was AJ and Paige.
But he's got a new frenemy now.
I guess.
I have no explanation for this.
I guess. It's just what it is.
So John Cena came out. And he essentially said right out of the gate that it was, in fact, unlikely that this was his final meeting ever with Randy Orton. So, at least they're not even pretending anymore. Said he beat Orton and earned the right to face Brock for the title. He said Brock thinks he's a champion, but he, John Cena, is there every night fighting like a champion. And the next time they step in the ring together, Brock is going to lose. He said everything that he did from now on was going to be a message to Brock, and he hyped up his main event with Seth later. So Stephanie comes out. She announces the Team Cena versus Team Authority match at the Survivor Series. That is the main event.
Well, first, she spent all this time trying to convince Cena to join their team before she ever announced the match.
No, I think she announced it first and then mocked him for pandering to the fans and then started talking about how...
She announced it would be an elimination match.
Yes.
But she didn't say it was going to be Team Cena against...
I see.
She did come out and say there'd be an elimination match, and she was trying to recruit Cena for her team.
That's right. Stephanie McMahon, after all of these years, came out on this show and thought she might be able to bribe John Cena into joining the Authority.
Well, she was telling him, you know, that... I mean, it was funny because, you know, John was out there, you know, kissing up to the San Antonio Spurs and things like that. And actually, the people were cheering him, and then she was making fun of the idea that, like, this is the one night of the year they're cheering you because you're kissing up to the Spurs.
Yes, he's pandering, and she says...
He was pandering.
He's pandering, and she mocks him, and he says, "I'm not pandering, I'm just listening to them." And she says, "Well, do you listen when they say Cena sucks?" And so it's supposed to be a setup for everyone chanting Cena sucks, but instead they start chanting his name.
Yeah.
And she was like, "Wow, one arena in years finally chants for you." And it was kind of funny that of all the times, this crowd decided that they actually liked John Cena.
Yeah.
So she was offering... she basically said, if you join the Authority, it'll be insurance. We will help guarantee you a victory against Lesnar. And, of course, he said no. And
the fans were chanting, "Don't sell out" at him.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
So Hunter came out, and he said, "I told you." I guess they'd made another $1 bet. And he told Cena that, "I have been here twice as long as you, and let me tell you, it gets harder every year. You're hanging on by a thread physically and mentally. You can't fight the future. And if you were smart, you would join the Authority, and we will make sure that, I guess, you have a job for years to come." I don't really know what his conclusion was.
That they'll start interfering in his matches so he can win matches without taking so much punishment, and thus prolonging his career.
I'm sure fans worldwide thought that there was a chance that John Cena would join the Authority here.
Oh, yeah. Considering they've done this angle how many times?
9 million times in the last year alone.
Yeah, I mean, they just did it a couple weeks ago with Paul.
So anyway, he said no, obviously, and Hunter said, "Well, if you want to work against the Authority, fine. We will make an example of you at Survivor Series." And he reminded him that the Authority always wins. We had the Usos against Miz and Mizdow. Obviously, everybody was chanting for Mizdow the whole time. Miz got sent outside. Mizdow jumped out there, laid next to him, so the Usos dived onto both of them, did the big hot tag, and the finish was the Usos doing the old switcheroo and pinning the Miz. So the storyline was that the twins were better stunt doubles than the guys whose gimmick are stunt doubles. And I actually liked that finish. I thought it was great.
It was fine. Yeah, that's good. I mean, it's what it, you know, long match.
Oh, yeah. There was a few of those on this show.
Miz was then throwing a tantrum for losing, and Mizdow did the exact identical tantrum, which I thought was pretty amusing.
So they had a shot of Cena backstage talking to Dolph. They presumed he was recruiting him for the team. And so after commercial, Kane met with him, and he said, "Listen, Dolph, that meeting with Cena was an act of aggression against the Authority." And he said, "I want to do an act of aggression myself." So he signed Kane versus Dolph for later, and Dolph hanged his head, sadly. Had the Hogan segment, he came out and said that he was happy to see Cena beating Orton. Now the fans decided they didn't like John Cena because they booed him. He said he could not wait to see his champion, John Cena, take on that stinky beast, Brock Lesnar. He plugged the Susan G. Komen deal. He threw out a lot of Jacks and Brothers and such. He had all of the...
Komen Mania.
Komen Mania. Had the women in the crowd come into the ring and dance with him.
There's like 10 of them. Yeah.
That was a segment. That was Hogan's appearance here on this show.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was just for the Susan G. Komen deal.
Bo Dallas came out and issued an open challenge. It was accepted by the returning Ryback. He destroyed Bo. Place went crazy. They chanted, "Feed me more." So apparently he's back as a babyface. I don't know what that means for McGillicuddy. What the hell was his name? Curtis Axel.
Curtis Axel. It means nothing for him.
Yeah, not good.
It means not good for him at all, no.
Not good. had a fiery Orton promo backstage, ranting and raving about how he had to take matters into his own hands. And I guess there is more to come from him. We had Dean Ambrose against Cesaro, supposedly. Ambrose did a promo before the match. Didn't seem to really give a shit that he had been beaten in the cell, but he was very upset with Bray. And so he cut a promo on him and then beat the hell out of Cesaro with a microphone, basically treated Cesaro like a jobber. Demanded Bray come out. Bray appeared on the big screen anyway. And he did this promo about how him and Dean are just like each other. The world is not made for people like us, he said. But I'm not your brother, I'm not your friend. And he warned Dean to run. And apparently Dean listened because we never saw him again. He just vanished. And they cut right back to the announcers who hyped up the rest of the show. What a follow-up for Dean losing to Seth Rollins in that cage match.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we needed an explanation from Bray that we kind of didn't get. We needed an explanation how he got in the cage, which we didn't even come close to getting. We needed Ambrose to threaten revenge and demand a match with him, which, I mean, he did kind of. He did want him to come out. But when he didn't come out, I mean, when he didn't come out and he just did the interview, he should have demanded a match with him as soon as possible. So, but maybe that's for next week's show.
We had Naomi versus Nikki. Brie was out there as Nikki's personal assistant. No heat for the match. Kind of boring. Naomi made a comeback. Brie...
No, nothing too. I mean, it's like the whole idea of this is you need to have like humiliating things on TV every week. I mean, you need to have funny things. And there was like, what did she do? She interfered in the match.
Yeah, she had been told she needed to interfere. And so she did, but then she felt terrible about it. And then Nikki hit the rack attack and got the win.
Mm-hmm.
Poor follow-up.
Weak follow-up, yeah, definitely.
And then we had Kane versus Dolph Ziggler. Long chin locks at 10:20 p.m. A disaster. They wrestled and they wrestled and they wrestled. And finally, Ziggler made a comeback, but he got cut off. But then he slipped behind on a sunset flip. Sunset flip out of nowhere for the pin. Dolph Ziggler actually won a TV match. Kane was outraged, rightly, seeing as how he lost to a guy who loses virtually every single week on television.
Well, he had to win because he's going into the main event, and Ziggler needed the help.
Well, I presume that Kane is going into that match, too.
Yeah, but he doesn't need the help.
No, he doesn't. I mean, Ziggler should have won. I was just baffled that he actually did.
Yeah, I thought it was obvious that he had to win, because if he had lost here, I mean, it would have just been made. It would have made John Cena look like a complete goof with a lousy team.
Well, I know what you mean, but I've seen a million times a guy that I thought should win that they beat anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't rule it out that Kane was going to win. I thought he should lose, but I thought he would lose just because they need to get the one guy some momentum. But yeah, I mean, it's been done before where they just will just not do that anyway.
So then Seth ran out afterwards. He jumped Ziggler from behind, laid him out. The Stooges were there helping, and then Cena ran down to make the save, cleared the ring, raised Dolph's hand, and that set up the main event,
in this run-in, there was some of the worst camera work I've ever seen. Every single key shot in that brawl was missed. When you know, Cena was like raising Ziggler's hand. It's like they missed every freaking shot. It was like unbelievable.
So the main event was Cena and Seth. So Seth here is the heel. He's got his ribs all taped up. And Cena, the babyface, goes right to work punching the bad ribs. So the Stooges build this wall. Seth smashes through, steamrolls Cena for the heat. They proceed to have a very long match. And so long that it kind of, at points, felt like they were just stalling for time. Finally picked up there at the end. Cena backdrops Seth onto the guys outside, hit a tornado DDT off the ropes. He's doing all of his finishes, goes for the STF, and then Kane runs in for the disqualification. Classic Raw finish here. So Ziggler runs in to make the save for Cena. Noble and Mercury are in. And then all of a sudden, the entire locker room empties, and we have a giant battle royal. Apparently, the story is that everybody was fighting for a chance to be in the Team Cena versus Team Authority match. There's guys in there like, as I noted earlier, Torito. And Everybody ends up outside except Cena, Heath Slater, and Bo Dallas. Cena lays out Slater and Dallas, gives them both AAs, and the show went off the air. So the Battle Royal at the end to set up that Survivor Series match to me was just so wacky.
It was, you know, they should have, like, I think the whole deal was, is that they didn't want you to know who was going to be in the teams. And I don't know why you wouldn't want the people to know. It's almost like there's like an aversion to letting people know what you're presenting on pay-per-view, unless it's like a couple of weeks out, you know, like somehow if you like actually announce a match 4 weeks out that, you know, by the time you get there, nobody will want to see it. Which is kind of,
Well, maybe they felt that this was a cliffhanger and that you will be so excited to find out who is on each team that you will tune in for sure next week.
You think so?
Well, I have no other explanation for not announcing the teams.
Well, you don't have to announce the teams. I wouldn't have said to announce the teams, but I would have made it clear, you know, at least like a couple of people who are on the teams. I wouldn't have run 40 people in. I'd have run about 6 people in.
I see.
So you kind of have it set up, and then next week, but you don't have everyone because obviously Randy Orton's the key guy. And then you have the whole thing where you don't know which team Randy Orton's going to be on, and you can milk that until, you know, maybe 2 weeks out and then pull the trigger on that one. So then you have that in that storyline going in, which they didn't even do that. But I mean, I guess you probably couldn't do that till next week anyway. Actually, you could have done it this week. Could have been no problem. And actually would have given you a better hook than what they had anyway.
So that was Raw Show, everybody. And in terms of news...
I thought in that main event, I thought Seth Rollins was tremendous.
Seth Rollins is great.
Yeah. The match was very good. And it was, you know, Cena's trying and everything, but Seth Rollins was so good in that match. It was almost a shame that they went 22 minutes for that finish. You know what I mean? Because when you do that to run in DQ finish, I always feel like if you go more than about 13 minutes with that run in DQ finish, it's pretty.
I hate that.
It goes from being, you know, heat to complete annoyance. Because you've just
and that was the exact reaction they got from the crowd as well. The crowd,
oh yeah,
they
yeah.
just the air went out of the crowd because yes, you're sitting there for 20 minutes watching a match, and all they can come up with is Kane runs in for the DQ.
Yeah,
sucked.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be so bad if it wasn't the finish of some, you know, like a 60%
of every Raw main event.
Yeah, 60% of the TV main events in the last month or something, it feels like that's the finish. So it's just like instead of it being like if you know anything that you do every now and then, I don't have a problem with. But when you do the same thing over and over again, and it's this like this cheap main event finish over and over again. Yeah, it's annoying.
So what's going on with TNA TV? That 10-day window that you talked about is expired.
Yes, it's. Obviously they don't have a deal, but they're imminent. They think it's coming.
They're imminent. I've been hearing that for months.
Yeah. It's coming soon. Coming soon.
Do you believe it's coming soon?
There's things that I know that lead me to believe that, I can't say it's coming soon because this is the television industry, and until it's signed and nothing is signed, then, you know, it could be tomorrow. It won't be tomorrow, by the way. Well, I don't think it'll be tomorrow, but it could be imminent or it could not be imminent because you're in negotiations and you know, you never know with negotiations how long they're going to last. So do I believe that it's coming soon? I believe that they're very close. I know they're very close. I don't know with who, but I know that they're very close. But I mean, you can be very close and end up not making a deal. Toby Keith was very close to buying the thing. He was in the frickin', you know, Bob Carter was in Toby Keith's house. So, you know what I'm saying? And there was no deal. And the same thing could happen. You know, I mean, I don't think one of the networks is going to go, well, we'll put you on if as long as Dixie's not in charge. I don't think that's going to happen. So they probably have a better chance of it not falling apart than that other deal did. But, you know, you got to get a lot, you know, whatever it's going to be. They're planning, but they, you know, like I said, nobody's been offered a new contract and no one's going to be until they make this deal. And the deal is, you know, like they thought they would have it done last week. They think they'll have it done soon. You know, And maybe they will, and maybe it'll fall apart.
So, speaking of television, tomorrow, Wednesday, is the debut of Lucha Underground. And do we have any last-minute notes on the show?
No, I mean, I'm curious to see. I mean, the first couple of episodes are probably not that good because a lot of the talent that came later wasn't signed yet. But I'm curious to see the look of the show and the concept of the show. I mean, I know it's the heel owner and whatever. But, yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's on a network that, you know, nobody watches. So it's gonna
I don't even know if I have El Rey. I don't think I do.
You probably do, but you may have to order separate because I know that I haven't. I know that I have to order.
Oh, it's on like a Spanish tier.
Yeah, I probably have to order. Well, no, because it's an English station, but it's still a separate tier. I have to call. I have to make a call and order the station because that's what it said. I was looking for the station. I found it, and it says it gave me a phone number to call if I wanted it. So, and it says it will probably cost me more money. So, whatever.
Well, I will check it out as we're doing this here.
Yeah.
All right. Also, Robert Drysdale suspended for his drug test failure. 1 year suspension.
That's actually shorter than I expected. But and they actually they told Anthony Marnell, who's the guy who is the most vehement about these PED tests, they told him to come up with new guidelines going forward for drug test failures because they believe that they have been too lenient and the era of leniency is over. So, and they want him to be closer to the Olympic thing. And the Olympic thing is 2 years for first offense. So we may be getting some 2 years for first offense. I mean, basically, if you get caught, you know, 2 years in this sport, you know, that's like in the Olympics. That's, you know, you go and miss one Olympics, that's your whole, you know, it could be your whole career unless you're very lucky. And this one, you sit out for 2 years. I mean, it's like it's not necessarily costing you your career, but it's a big chunk of it.
Well, according to this right here, I cannot get El Rey. It's only available on DirecTV or Comcast here. So I got Frontier.
You don't have Comcast?
No, I got Frontier now. Oh. So I may be out of luck. Oh. I guess we'll have to see what happens.
Oh, wait, do you get Unimas?
I don't know if I get Unimas. I don't think so.
Unimas. There's a good chance because it's in most of the country. But it's not a network. It's like syndicated stations. You know, kind of like My Network TV or WB or when WB was around. But you know, like things like that. Like Telemundo. Those that type of a thing.
I see. I may get Unimas, actually. According to this lineup here, I may get it. Is it available there?
Unimas?
Yeah.
I don't even know, but I'd be almost certain because if it's a Spanish station, it's going to be available in San Jose. So I would on one of the Spanish stations. Yeah. I don't know that as a fact, but I've got to think that, you know, if you're a Spanish network, you're going to be available here.
All righty, let's do some of these questions here. Corey says, could Dave talk about exactly what happened between Yoji Anjo and Akira Maeda backstage at UFC 23 in 1999? What preceded and followed the incident?
I don't remember.
Don't remember. I don't remember either, actually. Yoji Anjo and Akira Maeda?
I don't remember. Yeah, I'd have to look that up. I don't remember it. I mean, I know Yoji Anjo and Hickson Gracie.
Yeah.
I know Akira Maeda and Wataru Sakata, and a lot of Akira Maeda stories, but Yoji Anjo one doesn't ring a bell.
All right. If we figure it out, we'll update to Wednesday on the show. Anthony here says, I just listened to the Laps fan segment on WrestleMania 8. Why did WWE do the fake press conference where they announced which of five potential contenders would wrestle Flair for the title at Mania 8? I ask this because it seems that when that segment aired, the decision was already made to have Hogan wrestle Sid and not Flair. So why do the selection of the number one contender press conference if they were going a different direction for Mania anyway?
Because they wanted to make it look like they switched directions, and that Hogan was going after Sid type of a thing. That, you know, it was that he was getting to create a grudge match thing. That he had a different match and he pulled out of that match to create a grudge match.
All right. Sammy says, with all of the jealousy that Randy Savage had, how was he okay with Rick kissing Elizabeth on the lips after the match?
I don't know. I guess he had to agree to something.
All right. Simon here says, what was the opinion of Nikita Koloff as a worker? As from watching a couple of Starcades with him, he looked like a good big man.
He wasn't very good at all. He was super green. He could be carried with the, I mean, I saw Ric
Flair. Just like Chris Benoit.
Kind of like Chris
man
Benoit.
Man could
yeah.
be carried.
Yeah. I mean, I saw Ric Flair have good matches with Nikita, but he was tough. I mean, the thing with him is he had an incredible look for that time because he had these huge shoulders. And, I mean, that's why they put him with Ivan Koloff, because Ivan Koloff, even at his advanced age, was a hell of a worker. And they did a lot of six-mans using Barry Darso as the third guy, as Crusher Khrushchev. And Nikita was just in for glory spots. And when he would do TV matches, you know, he would just clothesline the hell out of people. And it was they would put him in with guys like Sam Houston, who were just great bump takers, who would make that clothesline, the Russian sickle, look tremendous. They did a great job with him. I mean, no doubt, you know, and he was, you know, him and Dusty Rhodes, the superpowers after Magnum. You know, him and Magnum TA actually had some good matches too, but Magnum TA was a good wrestler. So when he was in with good people, it was okay. I remember when it was like, was it Lex? Or I don't remember now. I think it may have been Lex Luger and Nikita. Had some matches, and the backstage thing was because neither of them could lead about how the match was going to be like this negative star match, because both Lex Luger and Nikita had reputations among the guys who could go. You could probably figure out who those are. That their job was to make them look good, and so people thought that they were much better than they really were, and then left having to go without a ring general and without someone to carry either of them, that they would both be exposed. And as I recall, it probably wasn't all that pretty.
All
but
right.
It wasn't as bad as some people expected it to be either.
Second, whose idea was the scaffold match, and why did anyone think it would make for a good match, not to mention the potential danger of the bump?
I don't know. There was a scaffold match way back, because I remember that the belief was that the scaffold match was invented in the Tennessee promotion in 1972. I think maybe like Jerry Jarrett and Don Green or something, or Al Green or whatever. But I think that we found out that somebody actually had done it in the 50s. But it was brought back, I'm thinking, in 83 with Bill Dundee, and I don't remember who he wrestled. It might have been Coco Ware. I think it might have been Coco Ware in 83. So then Bill Dundee goes to Mid-South, and in Mid-South, you know, he's the booker, and as the booker, he comes up with the idea of the scaffold match for Rock and Roll Express against Midnight Express. They did a pretty darn good job of building it up. It was successful. And then Crockett Promotions, the Midnight Express went to Crockett Promotions. Dusty came up with stealing the idea for Midnight Express against the Road Warriors, which was extremely successful for a number of reasons. Just the right gimmick at the right time. It was 86-ish when this was, because I was at that Starcade. And that was exciting as hell, because you just, that Road Warrior Midnight Express match live was really, really exciting, because the Midnight Express were just, you know, phenomenal workers on that scaffold. Even for a match where everybody was scared to death, and I think the audience was too, that somebody was going to fall and kill themselves. And Cornette actually did fall, and he didn't kill himself, but he blew out his knee when he fell. It was a spectacle. Now, at that point, when people saw it, it probably didn't need to be done again. You know, after that Starcade. But since it made so much money and was such a big draw, of course it was going to be done again. And they actually had booked the Road Warriors in the Powers of Pain, Warlord and Barbarian, to do them like 20 of them. You know, this is probably about a year or so later. And at that point, that was actually what got Warlord and Barbarian out of Jim Crockett Promotions, because I think both of those guys were thinking, we got to do like 20 scaffold matches, and we're the ones who are going to be taking the bump, and we're 300-pound guys, and it's probably not a good idea. I mean, because Cornette got hurt, and, you know, doing it, and we're bigger than he is, and everything, so they went to WWF to avoid those matches. And, yeah, I mean, after a while, the scaffold match was not a good idea anymore once it stopped drawing. I never liked it anyway. I mean, the first one was like the you know, I mean, the one I didn't like it when it was in Mid-South when I saw it with the Rock and Roll and Midnights, but it did draw. And I was, you know, I hated the idea of it when they did it at Starrcade, but it was extremely successful. And in wrestling, when something's extremely successful, you keep doing it until you burn it out. And I don't think we're going to be seeing that now. But you know, they've gone through so much. Yeah, I don't know. I think that after a while, the scaffold matches got so freaking crappy that they kind of got people don't do it anymore, except maybe on small promotions or something.
All right, Alvin here says, do you know what happened to the planned Hell in a Cell Fallout show? They promised an interview with Cena during the pay-per-view itself, but then the Fallout show never happened.
Yeah, no, that was weird. I didn't turn on the network. Oh, I should take that back. I was watching, and then I turned it off. And then I had, in this room where I'm at, I actually had it on the network. And then when I went back to work real quick, and I noticed that they were, when I came up, which was about, I don't know, five, maybe 10 minutes after the show ended, you know, maybe 10 minutes, and they were, and I had this, and the Sorrow match was on. So it was like, they must have gone right to a replay. So I don't have an answer as to why, but it's really weird that they advertised during the show, because I was saying the same thing. Didn't they advertise they were going to do a follow-up show, a post-match show? And here we are. We got the replay. So I didn't ask. I just thought that's weird.
All right. This person says, with some CM Punk merchandise being back on the WWE website, is this a sign of anything?
Yeah, it's probably a sign of something. I don't know exactly what, but I would presume it means that that the lawyers for both sides have reached an agreement that they can all make money, you know, without... you know, he was looking for something, and, you know, they didn't want to pay him any royalties because he quit, and then there was threat to sue. So either in some form, there was some sort of an agreement made between lawyers. But what that agreement is, I don't know, and it's probably confidential anyway, so it's going to be difficult to find out. But I'm going to guess he's getting a cut of the merch. If not, he's probably going to sue. So I'm guessing he's getting a cut.
William here says, what was the reasoning behind some pay-per-views being held on weekday nights instead of Sundays? I remember WCW did Starrcade in 93, 94, and 95, all held on the same day, December 27, which resulted in those shows falling on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, respectively.
At that time, the day of the pay-per-view was not that big of a deal. It's a different world. People are way, way, way more creatures of habit. And in those days, if it's a big wrestling show, wrestling fans were going to watch. It didn't matter what day it was on. Plus, it was Christmas week, so they considered Christmas week a holiday week, and it was a big week for wrestling. So whether it was a Monday, Tuesday, or a Thursday, or whatever, it was a big week. You know, it was like a big night. And Starrcade was a big show. So, you know, WrestleMania was on a Monday one year as well. It you know, when they're infrequent, it wasn't, you know, it didn't have to be a Saturday night or a Sunday night.
Mania was on a Monday?
I think the second Mania was on a Monday, yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. If they did that now, it would be terrible, because you remember that the Taboo Tuesdays didn't do well at all.
Oh, but, yeah.
And it would be harder now. I mean, people are really so much more creatures of habit. Before, you know, a TV show's got moved to another day because of a sports event or something, and people followed it. You know, I mean, it's like, and wrestling, people found their wrestling no matter when it was on. You know, and when there was a big show, again, I mean, you know, there were cities that were Monday night cities. There were cities that were Wednesday night cities. All those, you know, Bruno Sammartino Garden shows, I mean, not all of them, but most of them were on Monday nights. You know, you know, now you couldn't, I mean, you could run a Raw on a Monday, but, you know, it would be considered suicide to run a regular house show on a Monday.
All right. And finally here, can Dave talk a little bit about the Machine's gimmick, Andre, Edie, and Mulligan? What motivated the gimmick? How did it play out? And why did Hogan and Piper also get recruited? The Super Strong Machine gimmick in Japan relate in any way? And thank you for all you do.
It came from the Super Strong Machine, actually, thing. You know, Wakamatsu brought in Andre the Giant and Bill Eadie as Super Machine and Giant Machine. And it was just, I thought it was ridiculous, because the one thing was Andre the Giant in a mask, he didn't look, and in a mask superstar outfit, I mean, he was still a big guy, but it really visually made him just look like kind of a big guy and not like a giant, the way that he was dressed up. So I just thought that it was like, and Andre was such a big draw. And I think the deal was that, you know, Andre the Giant had been going to Japan for so long. And I think they just thought they were going to do something new with Andre the Giant. We're going to make him a mask guy. And everyone will know it's Andre the Giant. So that's what they did. And I don't remember it being that successful. I mean, people talked about it, but I remember, you know, it hurt Andre the Giant. And I don't want to say he didn't draw like Andre the Giant, because I think they probably were doing good business no matter what they were doing in those days in Japan. But the WWE people heard about it and just thought it was the greatest thing ever. I mean, a lot of people did, because it was just different. It was, you know, the idea of Andre the Giant with the mask as the giant machine was funny. So they brought it in, the same thing with Mass Superstar, you know, as a super machine. And then they started, you know, Hogan Machine, Crusher Machine. What was Blackjack Mulligan was Big Machine. Piper Machine, yeah. Hulk Machine. Yeah, they just thought it was funny. So they did it that way. And, I mean, it was, you know, for WWE to do like a little comedy thing, you'd go to the house show. Hulk Hogan would be Hulk Machine, and he would pull off his mask, you know, so behind the referee's back, and, you know, so everybody knew who it was. And Crusher did the same thing, and, you know, it was just a comedy spot for a match.
All right, everybody. On that note, we're going to wrap it up. We've got a lot of stuff coming up. We've got a bunch of shows over the next couple of days. Dave and I are going to be back on Wednesday and potentially Thursday as well. And a lot of shows, a lot of newsletters, a lot of stuff. So check it out, everybody, and we'll talk to you again after a while.